This is Two Guys Talking Golf. I'm here with good old Rob Miller. Rob, how are you today, buddy?
Pretty good, bro. Ready to talk some golf, our weekly spot.
That's right.
Lots of stuff going on.
I just, I know it's later in the week. I just want to remind you that you should be tipping your waitresses and waiters this weekend. if you and your, you and your wife go out tonight or something like that, just want to say, make sure to tip the people who are serving you.
Well, all right. Here's my question. Do I have to agree to the tip before the meal? And then that's it? Or is, something going to happen later? Like if it's a real, like I start saying, oh man, this is a really good meal. The waiter just going to be like sitting there with his hand out? What's going
to
happen?
I mean, for your convenience, it probably would work out to actually negotiate it first, because then if the person goes beyond the expectations, you don't owe them any more money. But the downside is that that person could, negotiate and then say, well, I'm already getting my, whatever percent, and then treat you and your wife like crap.
Yeah, that's a good question. Pre-meal tipping. Boy, we just created a monster there.
So anybody going out, tonight or this weekend, whatever, celebrate that Valentine's Day. Don't coocher your waiters and waitresses, please. Let's treat them
don't
right.
Don't cooch them.
Yeah, let's just not cooch them.
Now, it's not stiffing them. Stiffing is different.
Yeah, that'd be not giving them anything.
Cooching is just giving something that they think that they deserved more out of. Like, the pizza guy comes to the house, the cost is, $19.20. You give him a 20 and say, thanks. That's kind of cooching, right?
Yeah. I mean, or I guess, for what he's saying, if a guy makes, $200 a day, $5,000 a week is a good week. I mean, if you could, when that guy comes up to deliver the pizza, you just say, hey, how much do you make a week? And then you just, make it a bigger percentage of that and say, hey, I'm good.
Hey, sign me up for getting $5,000 a week for pizza.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a good point.
I'm in with that.
So if you haven't been following, which I don't know how, if you're on social media or the internet anywhere and you're looking up golf, I don't know how you don't know about it.
But
the
how whole, could you not?
Yeah, the whole story, and we've talked about it before, is that Matt Kuchar last year, was it last year in Mayakoba or was it 17?
Yeah, it was like November, I think.
Yeah, it was last year in Mayakoba, goes out, gets a local caddy, a pretty famous guy named El Tucan, and goes out, wins the tournament, and wins $1.3 million and hands his caddy $5,000, which the typical number that people believe is what caddies make is around 10%. So for most, everyday stuff on the PGA Tour, Cooch would have handed over $130,000 about,
Yeah.
And here he hands over $5,000 on $1.3 million. So then the rest of this, so nothing had really, that was just the rumor. And then finally, somebody talked to El Tucan and he confirmed it, that he got $5,000. And then Kuchar's people then contacted him later and said, hey, we'll give you another 15. And he was like, no, you're still not making it worth it. And now finally, I wouldn't say Kuchar came out and said anything, but his agent came out and said that, yes, it was negotiated beforehand. And if he made, what was it? If he finished in the top 10, this guy got $4,000, and Kuchar threw him an extra $1,000 just to say thank you.
Yeah, it's a thank you $1,000.
That's horrible.
Oh, it was $1,000 to miss the cut, $2,000 to make it, $3,000 for top 20, $4,000 top 10, and then the extra $1,000 was the bonus money for actually winning the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, then Kuchar's agent or whoever was speaking for him basically said like, oh, somebody got in this guy's ear and said, hey, let's make a big thing of it because you didn't make enough money.
Yeah. So that you would think you completely side with you understand the caddy's point, right? That's such a small amount. Matt Kuchar's made like $146 million on tour, I believe. Or is that what it is? Let me see.
I don't think it's that high. I think it's like 30. I think it's like 50 million or something like that. I mean, the guy's made a ton of cash.
No, excuse me. It's not 146. It's 46 million on the money list.
Yeah. And that's just money. Hey. That doesn't include Skechers money or RBC Bank or all these other things that, we're paying him as well.
It's getting hot out there, man. I thought Skechers are supposed to relax you. I thought they were relaxing shoe.
Maybe that was the issue. Maybe El Toucan didn't want to wear Skechers out there, and he would have made more money had he put on a pair.
I'll give you 15 grand tip to wear these Skechers. No thanks.
but yeah, I mean, it's pretty insulting. I mean, even if you did kind of negotiate something up front with this guy, I mean, you just won $1.3 million. That's like winning $1.3 million and you go to your closest friends that you've known for 20 years and you go to dinner and you say, you know what, you guys, let's just Dutch this. Everybody pay their own. Like, come on, you just won $1.3 million. You can't buy your buddies a beer or, you know, a dinner, knowing the guys for 20 years. But to me, it's just like, man, it's just a slap in the face, even if it was negotiated beforehand, to only give the guy $5,000 on $1.3 million.
Yeah, it just seems so low. Even though it was negotiated ahead of time, I understand. I just don't think – I have to believe that caddy kind of didn't know what he was in for in that way. And you know, he's – you know, you're talking about a caddy, in a local caddy in Mexico City. And, you know, the PGA Tour coming is a fairly new scenario, you know. They just don't have they don't really have the power there.
Yeah. I mean, what's he going to do? I mean, go up to Cooch and say, no, I want X, 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 you know, make all these demands. And then Cooch is just going to go find another caddy, you know, yeah. I mean, in a way.
Of course. I mean, I do see both sides of it. I always defer in my head, though, to what would my wife have said is the right thing to do?
Yeah.
And sometimes, and I would say most of the time, nearly all the time, she listens to the podcast, she's right. You know, and it's like that. I, you know what it reminds me of? The end of Christmas Vacation, where he's waiting for the bonus for the swimming pool and he gets the Jelly of the Month Club. And then his wife, you know, they kidnap him, his boss and all that stuff or whatever. His wife says, you should be ashamed. I forget what the guy's name is. And then finally, you know, Brian Doyle Murray gives him his Christmas bonus, you know, everyone his Christmas bonus. I kind of think like we're going to that scenario just without moose mugs. That's it.
No moose mugs and no Dickies.
No moose mugs. We need both, really, when you think about it. I could be wearing a Dickie right now. Maybe next time.
And I've seen people like on social media and stuff ask, like, you know, they ask that question. Was it pre-negotiated? You know, did he just carry the bag? Did he do all the other caddy, you know, responsibilities? Did he do all the stuff? I mean, to me, if I was in that position, I feel like I would have to do right by that caddy. Like there's no, I mean, I don't care what you negotiated. If the guy didn't do every single thing, and maybe you don't give him the full 10%, but maybe you give him eight, you know, maybe give him 80 grand or, you know, whatever the number is.
What if you gave him half? I mean, just like, I mean, that's another, you've saved all that money. You know, are you still, are you paying your regular caddy for the week? I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of retainer that happens. I'm not sure. We have to have, maybe we'll get some caddy on. If you're a caddy, PGA Tour caddy, mini tour caddy, whatever it may be, you know, leave us a message. Come on next time. Let's talk tip and etiquette and this and that. But he's saving some big time money. Do you know he's 10th on the all time tour money list?
Kuchar is? Kuchar?
Yeah.
Jeez. I mean, maybe the guy's just really crappy with his finances and he's blown all that cash, you know? Maybe he's, you know, starting to live the lifestyle of like a 90s rap artist. And he's just buying Bentleys and Ferraris and stupid houses and jewelry. I mean, who knows? But I highly doubt it.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, nobody knows. But there's, you know, other things coming out. There's a guy on Twitter who's telling his story, right? Oh, legal hooks. It's one word, legal hooks, H-O-O-K-S, on Twitter, saying that back when he was a 16-year-old, short kid, he was caddying for Kuchar, and actually they stopped at the turn for ice cream, and the two other pros gave like free ice cream to the caddies, and Kuchar hands them an ice cream and he's about to unwrap it and say thanks. He says, that's not for you. That's what a guy playing with me. And it's like, oh, really? Now is that, I don't know if that's, we don't know if that's true.
Nope.
Even it could be messing with the kid. Who knows? You know, maybe he was, but this person felt compelled to talk about it in 8 tweets, you know, a series of, you know, 1-8, 2-8, 3, you know, And he put his story out there. So that's kind of interesting to hear that. You know, you wonder how many of these things might come out. And again, grain of salt, but the fact is that he won $1.3 million and gave Caddy $5,000.
Yeah, that's...
And nobody out there kind of cares. In the perception of that is worse than the agreement.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, oh, yeah, for sure. And like the story you said, because you sent me it, and I read that too, the guy who, you know, with the whole ice cream thing. And it's funny because I, you're right. I think a lot of these stories are going to start coming out about how, you know, Kuchar didn't tip at this restaurant or this guy, and he was mean to the, I mean, we're going to start probably hearing 1,000 stories that'll, in quotes, help this, you know, help back up this story with El Tucan. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where everybody piles on when a guy's down, and it's just going to keep happening. So we're going to see more. But it was funny because I was always under the impression that Kuchar was like this super nice guy, whatever. And I know a guy from high school who used to always trash Kuchar and say he was a total jerk. He was a big, you know, he was a horrible guy and all this. It's just a front.
Really? That's interesting.
And I had no idea. And he never like gave any like real evidence. So I didn't really know. I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm just believing on your word. You just don't like the guy. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's coming true, but now it's like, okay, maybe he's not as squeaky clean as we thought.
Yeah, you got to keep an eye on him around the poker table, I guess. Something like that.
Seriously, I mean, did he even give the guy a free pair of Skechers? I mean, here's $5,000 in a box, you know, and in some free shoes. I mean, he could have gave him at least something like that to, like, offset it, but.
I don't know. Maybe it was a shoe size problem. Who knows?
I mean, yeah, the guy doesn't take extra wide.
Yeah, that's probably it. But doesn't like the colorways, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and like there's a picture here with that you know on the story we published on it, and it's, you know, Kuchar with El Tucan, and then he's got a flag, you know, the flag from probably the 18th hole that there's an autograph, and maybe Kuchar figured that autograph is worth, you know, $75,000. He paid him $5,000. It's a total of $80,000. He's good to go.
The picture becomes worth more than what he was actually paid for the week.
That flag is worth way more. But it's, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's unfortunate because, you know, if Kuchar really is, and I don't know him. I mean, I've never met him. If he is a really nice guy, it stinks that he made, you know, maybe made one mistake or, you know, who knows? I mean, he could also be a guy who he didn't even know. He probably has people who, you know, write these checks to these caddies and all that. They might not have any idea, you know. Kuchar may have not had any idea that he only got $5,000. Yeah, I mean, to, you know, play devil's advocate, you know, he could have been like, oh, my accountant's going to cut you the check and da 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 da, we're good to go. And he had no idea that the caddy, you know, the guy only caught him $5,000. I mean, I don't know. Try to look at both sides of it.
Yeah, there's, for me, when, as soon as he was offered that 15,000 through. Now Kuchar spoke about this, right? He said that apparently, you know, his agent Steinberg went back and offered the caddy the 15 grand. Like they were talking about, he said, no, thank you.
Yep.
When Kuchar talked about it and, you know, just at Riviera, I think it was after the Pro-Am yesterday, he was saying that, you know, that they asked him something along the lines of, where's that 15 grand come from? And he's like, well, it's not coming out of my agent's pocket. I'll tell you that, you know, so he's like, I would pay it. But, you know, the caddy said, no, I don't want it. Right. Yeah. So somebody's in his ear now. So he said the caddy apparently has said that he thinks like 50 grand would have been a fair price.
And I think that's true. I think that's true, and I think that's still saving money for Kuchar, you know?
Yeah, I mean you're saving – it's 10 times the amount he paid him, but it just seems – it does seem fair for the work, and I'm sure – I would love to talk to a caddy about this. I mean, somebody's got to be able to talk about that with us. It would be fantastic to get that perspective.
And if he had his regular guy in the bag, he was going to pay $130, $120. So, I mean, you're still saving money. you pay him – give him his 80 grand, let him walk away, and just be done with it. Say you made a mistake.
60% off coupon.
Exactly.
And you're going to win? I mean, you tell me you wouldn't sign up for that? So look at it that way. If you use this caddy, I guarantee you're going to win. You got to pay him 50 grand. But you're going to win 1.3 million. Would you have done that?
Oh, okay. I mean, absolutely. Who wouldn't? Yeah, It'd be a, yeah.
No, I'm getting fired up, man.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You're going to start bringing out the anti-Kuchar shirts and all that stuff. You're gonna be
no, I wanted a couple of things. I know now that if I want to be a, I'd love to be a pro caddy. I'm just not going to do it in Mexico. That's off the list. I know that's not the place to go to support the fam. And the other thing is, out of all the, you know, golf is pretty sterile compared to other sports. We don't have Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell giving us all these quotes or various other Steelers and things like that. We don't get that a lot. But of anybody to create controversy in the PGA Tour, would you have guessed Matt Kuchar?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, come on. No. You would expect it from like a Poulter or, you know, a few other guys, maybe even Rory nowadays. He gets a little heated and stuff like that. But yeah, Kuchar is not the guy that you're thinking is going to be, you know, causing a stir in the new space.
I love it. Give us stuff to write about. Bring back Toothache Rory. I like Toothache Rory, you know? Like we need that stuff.
It's but yeah, so Kuchar, we'll see. I mean, we'll see the next thing that happens. I don't know. I don't know where it goes from here. I mean, either way, your credibility a little bit is taking a hit, and yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if Matt realizes, you know, what the perception is kind of out there, you know, type of thing. I think you're going to get something, you're going to get people weighing in that are outside of golf, you know, and then that's going to really change it, right? Because yeah. They don't care. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. What's normally fair? Well, normally they get 10%, but I gave them, you know, whatever that percentage is.
Yeah, like less than 1% or just over 1% maybe.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not a great perception, and you would think that most people out there would be so happy to win $1.3 million, you would pay that guy $50,000 easy.
Yep.
Thanks for helping me win. You figure $5,000, it's like, thanks, you really didn't do anything. You know, I could have had anybody on the bag.
Yeah.
I guess that's the feeling that's there. But it's interesting. I don't know if anybody's a bad guy. These things are rumors and these stories and everything, but it's definitely controversial. That's for sure.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we can definitely move on to something that's definitely not controversial. Danny Lee's got some really cool irons in the bag.
Oh yeah.
Classic sure. Irons.
Mizuno MP32s, brand spanking new.
Yep. I remember working in a golf shop when those came out. And
cut muscle.
Exactly. Cut muscle. Yeah. Right? The cut muscle. Yep. But yeah, just a great, it's one of those sets of irons that, you know, you'll still see in somebody's bag out in the range, and they're usually just beat to hell. Cause they're pretty old now. I mean, they gotta be 10 years old, maybe right around that, maybe a little more.
Yeah. Somewhere around there. Yeah, for sure.
And, yeah, I mean now and he's got like a brand new set, like they are brand spanking new. But yeah, you still see them out there. They're just usually not in great shape. But yeah, I mean, I guess when you're Danny Lee, you're playing on tour, Mizuno will either find some brand new heads in the back of the warehouse, or they'll forge a few for you. But the forums are loving them. So it was going on in the forums. Guys were talking about them and reminiscing, and everybody's a big fan of him putting these back in play.
Yeah. Now, do you remember in our last podcast, I told you like, MP33s, MP32s, those were like some of the most beautiful irons ever.
Yep.
And then boom, brand new sets appear. So what do I say this week? What do you want me to...
what do you want to come back, you know? Persimmon fairways?
Rack MB, something like that?
Yeah, and then the best was our own Ryan Barath was on there commenting and all that, you know, that he would love a set. And, you know, what does your world ranking have to be in order to get a set of these made for you? And it got quite a few good responses out there on social media. And I think they added up to like, they could get five or six people who wanted them. But I don't think that's enough for Mizuno to put them back in production. But yeah, I mean, I forgot how good these things look when they were new. I mean, they really do. I mean, they're simple. The cut muscle was basically like a little, I'm trying to know how to describe it. It's kind of like just a little kind of an indention channel in the center back of the club. If you don't remember them or never saw them, but, cause there may be some people out there who are too young to remember them, But yeah, I mean, they were just a great, simple looking iron. I remember hitting them when I was working at a golf shop there. I didn't have the game for them. So they never made it in my bag other than just hitting them on the range. But yeah, I mean, they look beautiful when they're not bag chattered up and beat to hell.
Well, that's my point of contention. I love them. I love chrome. Chrome irons to me are just classic, beautiful look. And they're difficult to do. I remember probably 5 years ago, Chris Voschel and I were talking, Chris of Mizuno, and we were arguing with someone else who liked satin compared to chrome. And Chris was saying, you know how tough it is to do chrome? You know, you can't have any imperfections when those heads are done, because that chrome has to be perfect, absolutely perfect. It's difficult. It's got that classic look. Yeah. And I don't mind it with bag chatter. First forged irons I had, besides like a Northwestern starter set, something like that, with some Hogan Apex, and they were, I love the bag chatter. At first, it's like, no. But then, you know, it's kind of like you get your new car, you park it far away from the store, and then you get your first ding, and then it's like, whatever, embrace it. You know, I've got a ding here, a ding there. I'm going to use it. But that chatter on irons, it just kind of brings me back at carrying the bag around, and you just, you know, hear your clubs rumbling behind you type of thing. And it looks like, you know, they're tools.
Yeah.
Tools digging in the dirt. I'm in favor of that. I don't mind the bag chatter on chrome at all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't either. I mean, I get it. Like some people get, you know, they do look worn or whatever, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of a badge of honor. I mean, even my, you know, I don't keep irons in the bag that long, but even my Strixons from last year, I mean, I had them in the bag most of the year, but even now, like they've got a little chatter to them, and you know,
yeah,
it kind of reminds you of like, yeah, man, I was using these things. I've hit some good shots and probably some real bad ones, but you know, it's also something kind of cool to see a brand new set just, you know, nice and shiny out there.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, when you take your bag picks, you know, to post, you take that when before a ball is struck.
Well, also too, like looking at his, because I remember the 32s. I mean, I don't remember them, you know, perfect, but his almost looks like they have a satin finish on the back and then they're chrome the rest of the way. Did they always have that?
Yeah, you're right. There is that look to it.
Yeah, like the backside is all like kind of a, like either a little brushed or maybe a media blasted a little. It's just like kind of a duller finish. And then the sole's chrome. I mean, all around the outside looks to be chrome. The hosel looks chrome.
Maybe it was. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just have any from Mizuno, feel free to reach out.
Let us know.
Send us samples. We'll just, don't answer it. Just send us the sample.
Yeah, just send
we'll answer it in person.
Yeah, just send us a couple sets and we'll check them out. Let me see. I'm searching the old like Google images. No, I guess they did kind of have a little, that set's pretty beat up.
A little satiny look?
Yeah, I guess they did have a little satin to the back of them. Like I said, I just didn't remember. Well, yeah, I guess it did. I guess I just didn't remember that. But yeah, that's kind of cool. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if anybody else maybe comes up. You know, some other player comes out and starts having something similar, where they come out with like, you know, older set of, you know, like you said, TaylorMade rack MBs or something like that. I doubt it, but it would be kind of cool to see some old blades or old legendary players irons showing up on tour more.
Well, so here's a question: is, you know, how, you know, retro is in various places. I was just at the toy store, you know, getting some little things for my kids. And, you know, there's a wall of retro things. There's a Q-Bert, little handheld Q-Bert machine, and all these pop figures that are, you know, retro guys and things like that. So it's never hit golf clubs, right? Because golf is about, or the equipment business is about innovation.
Yeah.
And moving forward, and we've got a better grind now. We've got multi-material technology and everything. We've got tungsten that's hidden. You can't see it when we chrome over it. It actually moves it to more of a true sweet spot type of thing. But do you think a retro movement, like a retro reissue? So say Mizuno says, we're going to do a reissue with maybe slightly different finish of MP32s. How do you think that would be perceived? Is it just not enough to, you know, you're just not going to make enough sales to make it worthwhile? Or is that something that people are maybe like looking for?
I don't know. I think people always in their back of their mind, they want a set of a set of irons that they loved, whether they owned them or they just, you know, really wanted that set back in the day or whatever it is. But I mean, if they made them, they're not going to make them cheaper. So right. You either buy a 10-year-old club that's reissued for say $1,000, or you buy the brand new set for $1,000. I think when it comes to it, actually handing the money over the counter, they're still going to buy the new ones. Unless somebody's got like that, you know, that kind of extra money where they'll just buy a set of MP32s, say for example, and just kind of hang them on the wall, hit them a little bit, but they really got a gamer set of, you know, say 919 tours, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, well, you certainly don't want to cannibalize your own sales.
Exactly.
You know, then you're just making it, you would have gotten that sale anyway. You don't want to, you know, put it in something else, which is such a low production. But, you know, there is a certain power of saying something is limited and then offering something limited, a shaft that is, you know, has, you know, Augusta themed colors, because you can't say Masters, type of thing. Those things that happen, which are super cool. You know, there's a lot of super stroke grips like that. They do things that are limited. Obviously, that's a much smaller expense than a set of irons. But, you know, sometimes when there is that kind of, you know, you want to be different. You want to be a little bit different than the next person. And you're into that. I can't see how that wouldn't be something which people might try to get.
Yeah, I think they would. I mean, I know, what was it? There's been a few little irons like that where they put out, you know, stuff. It's not necessarily retro, but just like special editions. But I mean, yeah, I mean, if you're Mizuno, does it look like you've got this big year coming with all these new woods that have, like, you know, a bunch of hype around them? The 919 stuff is really popular right now. You know, are you basically putting the MP32 out there and saying, hey, man, this is just as good as an MP18? You know, I mean, in a way, that's what you're kind of saying. If you bring it back for mass production, you're just basically saying, like, here it is, like, you know, go ahead and buy it. Because you're not going to say, like, hey, here's MP32. It's almost as good as MP18. Like, you're still going to say it's a good iron. But then how do you justify, well, the MP18's new and this one's not?
Well, I think that's where the finish kind of comes in. That's where you have to have that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's so it's like, yeah, this is, we believe our MP18s are better, but, you know, for those that miss this, because like we had Justin, who's a member, J13, on podcast 2 months ago, and he went for a search of new irons, and he's a really good player, right? He's right around scratch, if I remember.
Yep.
Maybe plus. And he went with the same model. He found an old set of Strix irons. What was the model? Do you remember?
Yeah, 745s.
745s. And he tried everything new. And he went right back to those. He found a new, basically a nearly new set that a member contacted him and said, hey, you know, I saw you were mentioning this. I have these if you want them. And that was his choice.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's guys out there who might think, hey, this is it. And I know that if you, you know, if a member came out and they got a set of MP32s in this kind of condition, whether it's just barely hit or whatnot, and they posted it, I mean, they'd be like superstar of the day type of thing.
Yeah. No, that's true. But I think, you know, I mean, but also too, I guess in the golf world, there's so many people out there who purchase, you know, certain pieces of equipment without really, you know, saying, hey, this is going to be the best thing for me. This is just something I want.
Yeah, and sure.
I think you'd still get a lot of sales that way, but it'd be kind of cool to see, you know, to see some other stuff, out there. I mean, 32s are cool. I would love to see the MP33 back. I thought that was a great little
oh yeah, for sure.
Or no, was it the MP30 that had the little cavity to it? That MP30.
That era. And I wonder if this is, I don't know if it's still possible, because I'm kind of been out of the JDM world for a while, but you used to be able to go onto a site. It was a Japanese base. It was like Mizuno Japan. And you used to be able to say, I want MP32s or MP30s. And this is where I want the markings to be. This is where I want it to say MP30. This is where I want an M. Or no, I don't want an M. I want the run bird. You know, that's where I want it. And I want that. I don't want it on the sole. I want it here in the cavity. And I want the Mizuno M. I don't want the same Mizuno. You used to be able to do that. There was a way to configure everything and request it.
Yeah.
And they make it custom. And I don't know if that exists, but boy, you could spend an easy hour and a half just getting lost in there saying, wow, this is what I want. I don't want to go into a big box store type of thing. I want this custom. It was pretty cool. If I really understood what the site was telling me, I might have ordered some.
Yeah, it was, I think it's still around. It was called either like Yoro or Euro, something like that. It was like Y-O-R-O, Craft.
And yes,
I believe it's still around. I believe you can still do it. I don't know what the price is, whatever. But yeah, they'll basically hand make you a set of Mizunos with, yeah, different markings. They'll like, you know, either soften some edges or they'll, you know, just, they'll do some work to them to make them exactly what you want. And you pay for that privilege, but you can definitely still do that, I believe.
Yeah, and it's always for you, as much as your friends might be into equipment or whatever, it's always just you, right? They're going to be like, wow, nice. You know, doesn't mean the same. So you're doing it for yourself. And that's with all this. If you're buying, you know, old stock or something that's limited, that's kind of a purchase for you, right? So, you know, if you could pay it. Maybe you win the Mayakoba. Then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can tip your caddy an amount that he can't even buy a set, probably.
I'm pretty sure that the set of those would go or for around what El Tucan was paid.
Oh, poor guy.
I know. Hooter jokes. Whoever thought?
I know. Who'd ever thought that would be the main focus? Hooter jokes. But it works.
It works.
So yeah. So I mean, what? So if you could pick an old iron, like a 30, you know, what would be your old iron that if you were on tour and you could have anything like that, what would you go to somebody and say, hey, let me get a set of these, and they just say yes. What irons would you grab?
Oh man, I think it would be tough for me to not go with like a tour stage model. No, I know what it would be. I don't know the model number, but there were a set of Zodias. Do you remember? You ever hear of Zodia? You know Zodia?
I mean, I haven't heard anybody say that name in probably, I couldn't even tell you how long.
I know. I still have a set of wedges by Zodia. I believe they're called US spec. They're black. You can see all the grain in the wedge. They shredded balls. There's obviously like the old grooves, but you pretty much had to put a ball in play on every hole. I mean, that's what if you had go all out with these wedges, but they're probably, I mean, I'm talking something from 2005, somewhere around there where they were produced. But before then there was this kind of mythical iron and you couldn't figure out how to order it. It wasn't like you could go to their Japanese website and so forth and do it. But it was a really cool looking cavity back, almost looked like tour stage during that era of, were they Z101s? Am I remembering them correctly?
I mean, I remember the company, but I don't really remember their product line a whole lot.
Yeah. Z101 forged irons. I mean, those to me were pretty awesome. I love those. So they haven't been produced in a long time, but they just looked great. You know, they have X blades were really nice. I mean, I would always go back to those roots. That's kind of one of the reasons I really like that kind of design. They just look powerful, but you don't get any of that ridiculous offset or anything like that. They're handsome.
Yeah, that is true. When you go to that JDM route, a lot of times there's very little offset. Yeah, I mean, I think the ones that I never had, but I always kind of wanted, because back in the day they were so just insanely crazy, was R7 Forged, which was, again, JDM model only. They didn't really have a badge in the back. It was just like a, what was it? It was just kind of like their inverted cone type look in the back of
yep.
it. But yeah, the R7 Forged was always just a cool one. Mike Weir played it. And it was just like, what the heck is this thing? But had very, you know, had less offset than the standard R7 and all that. But R7 Forged to me was always just a cool club. I never got to really hit one though. Never had a set, but always wanted them.
Well, someone's selling them. They're in Japan. but $366 bee heads, apparently. It says TaylorMade bee, so I'm guessing those are the bee heads.
Yeah, those are like the smaller blade type heads, but
it still looks pretty like a sizable iron, but I guess you'd have to see it kind of like an address. But I see what you're saying. It was very minimalist with its badging. It looks like, I mean, maybe there's TaylorMade on the hosel, but there's just R7 yeah. and then the iron number on the sole. There's yeah. nothing in the cavity.
No, they were just like, I mean, it was like they forged them and then they realized like, oh, these cavities aren't going to, or these badges aren't going to fit in the cavity. So, well, we'll just move on and just keep going. But yeah, those things were awesome. I always wanted a set, and you know, just never. I at the time when they were out there, they were just so expensive. There was no way I was ever pulling the trigger on it. But and now it's like, yeah, do I spend $400 on those, or do I take $400 and buy something else, put it towards some new irons? But
yeah, agreed.
If I was on tour and didn't have a club contract and wanted to get a little crazy, yeah, maybe I say, you know, hey, TaylorMade, let me get a set of R7 forged.
Yeah, go ahead, do it. Give it a shot.
Yeah, when I make it on tour,
I'll support you.
Yeah, when I make it on tour, I'll do that.
I think if there's one that, you know, people out there are like, what the heck is tour stage? But I think the rack forged TP irons, yeah. I think those, as far as, you know, TaylorMade had some really nice irons back then. I mean, the whole 300 series and everything, those were even really nice. Remember the high toe and everything, or what do they call it? More square, the layman's, right?
Yeah, well, those are, yeah, the 300 forged. Yeah, those 300 forged
that he had. But these, I always really liked the TPs, because they have a, you know, the TP badge was just so iconic for so long. I miss that thing.
Yeah, they made a mistake when they got rid of that badge. It was so simple and cool.
Yeah, it was one. I mean, it told you everything about it that you needed to. You know, there's TaylorMade and there's the checkered flag, and I mean, it looked a really good logo.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was a big fan of that. And a lot of people in the forums were the same way. Like, they really liked what those were, you know, that badging. They were hoping it would come back, and it unfortunately just never did. But it's, but yeah, there's, like I said, some of that stuff was pretty cool. And, you know, and TaylorMade did have a good run back then with irons. They were killing it.
Yeah, for sure. They absolutely did. So. And then now, would you make any equipment changes as we kind of move on to our last subject, which is Riviera?
Yep, the Riviera that's not being the Genesis that's not being played.
The Riviera River that's being forged as we speak.
Yep.
Golf jokes.
Yep. It. Would I make? What were you saying? Would I make any equipment changes for?
Yeah, well, we've got it's not being played today, which is Thursday when we're recording this. They've got, you know, 80% chance of rain, just like 100% today, 80% tomorrow, then pretty good on Saturday, and then Sunday 80% again for the PM. It just seems like this is going to be a mess with highs in the low 50s.
Yeah, it's crazy weather right now over on that West Coast swing, and usually it's not that bad. But yeah, I mean, looks like it's probably going to be another Monday finish, which nobody likes, you know, because you're at work typically. So, you know, having to you know, follow along at work or refresh the old browser is never what anybody truly wants to do.
No, you wonder what. I'm sure we get some gems of Golf Channel programming in replacement for it.
Yeah, like I wonder what's being played right now. You know, it's like it's going to be like some crazy old tournament or whatever. But yeah, I mean, another, you know, last week Monday finish, and you know, thankfully we work in golf, so in the office we kind of had a TV and we put it on for the short time it was. But yeah, I mean, it's Monday finishes are never great. You know, you just kind of look online later in the afternoon and find out who won, and that's just all it is.
Yeah, I guess now because there's so many ways to kind of get your golf fix in. You know, it's a little bit better, but you know, back in the day, you know, 10 years ago and whatnot, you were kind of stuck. If you were in office, that was it. I'm gonna miss it.
Yeah, yeah. Before the whole streaming, you know, video and all that. Yeah, you were just it was basically done.
Yeah, it's nice. And it seems like every time I read every every day someone's coming out with an app or a new way to get golf content, and they want you to pay for it, and this and that. It's a little confusing, but at least there's options out there, which we wouldn't have to watch something like this. But boy, a Monday finish it again. I hope Phil's leading again. I want to see another little soundbite. Let's do it.
him and Paul Casey not enjoying each other's company out there.
not quite. Phil's awesome, man. He's I think it's really funny. I mean, he was so far ahead. He's like, come on, really? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, you knew, like, come on, man. I've got this thing won pretty much. Let's just, you know, let's just get it over with. But
yeah, this isn't Baltusrol. You know, let's just do this thing.
But we get to see, get to see how Tiger plays. So we'll get to watch that and see. And, everybody will start making their Masters predictions good or bad once they see what he does this week.
That's right. Remember, everybody needs to put on their waterproof Skechers.
That's right. So, all right. Well, I guess we can kind of end it there and get into the weekend and watch a little golf, and you know, that's about it. Unfortunately, you and I won't be playing. So
no, and Riviera is like a bucket course for me. That's a bucket list course. It's just beautiful. I love watching it every year. So hopefully they get it in. Doesn't seem like you're going to get a lot of roll. So the Fred Funks of this world
they're not going to be favored.
It's probably why he's not in the tournament, but. who is the shortest hitter now?
I don't know. That's a good question, because nowadays even guys that you don't think are that long are pretty long. So,
like, you know, like Donald was pretty short off the tee, right? All in all.
I think a guy like Duffner is probably pretty short.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the power that these guys generate. I don't know who's the shortest. That's what no one ever pays attention to that. We got to do some research maybe for next time.
Yeah, who's the shortest hitter, but still a big name.
Yeah, exactly. Who's the best short hitter on the tour? That's what we're trying to determine.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, I guess we'll leave everybody there, and Rob, have a great weekend, and I guess we'll see everybody next week.
You too. Take care.